Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back, and it is now or never. And every year for Christmas, I always provide an insight into how America was manipulated. And as a matter of fact, what happened in America had a rippling effect that literally manipulated the world into changing and focusing this time of year into this huge, I'll just call it commercial success, capitalism. This was all done to help stimulate spending and lift and bolster up, buoy the bottom line of corporations. Now, if anybody understands the word Black Friday, then you understand what that means, because Black Friday is the first point in time in the year where retailers finally go into the black. In other words, from January up until the end of November, they are at a loss. They're operating at a loss. And that their sales increase so much. Now, I don't know if this is true anymore. This used to be. So Black Friday goes on. I mean, the term goes back a few decades. So with the way things are going, and the way consumption is going, it seems like, you know, Amazon and a lot of these companies are making, at least they're making their bottom line a lot earlier, and they're making profits because they report profits at a regular basis. But this whole concept, because this old term Black Friday, it goes back. And what it does do, it's an indictment. It proves that we have been kind of programmed ourselves to feel this obligation to spend a lot of money in what we would call celebrating the birth of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. But it's actually, there's lots of companies out there that are selling you stuff. And as a matter of fact, we're going to get into the history of this so that you can kind of see how it really didn't have much to do with Christ at all. It had more to do with convincing you to spend money on a wreath, to spend money on a tree, and these decorations. And it started getting crazy because people started buying all this stuff. But the fact of the matter is, and so this is why it's really important to go through the history before we get into how corporations really started exploiting this and how we kind of went down this path of going, oh my, this is pure manipulation. And this is probably the first time manipulation was done. And folks, right here, invented in America, world global manipulation. And we'll get into all of that. But before I dive into the Christmas messages, let me just say a few things. I got to give you a warning first off for those who are, you know, tuned into this conspiracy is a bad thing. The fact of the matter is everybody in some way or another conspires. And sometimes parents conspire. Yeah, it doesn't necessarily have to be for bad purposes. It doesn't have to be for evil. It's just that if you want to do something, and let's say you want to remain anonymous, you know, you go and conspire with somebody, you in confidence talk to somebody and say, hey, who can I help? Oh, these people down the street, they they just lost a child or something. And oh, you know what? And you go out of your way to buy things and make sure that you do not have any trail back to you, because it's a completely an anonymous gesture. So anyway, there's all sorts of things that we like to put these labels on of this secrecy or what have you. But the fact of the matter is, this is where we actually look at a conspiracy without really conspiring other than at a few different points. And so I believe that there may have been some things, but I don't think it was necessarily a dark room, Illuminati plan. But I do believe it became a tool and it had been exploited. And that's what we wanted to, disclose to you as we go through this today. And so I want to remind you that we have a YouTube channel, Reclaiming the Republic. So if you go there, go ahead and subscribe. And we're hopefully going to be launching, I'll just keep it with this. I'll focus in this particular message strictly on Christmas, and I want to disclose to you what we have attuned or the curriculum that we have for this coming year. These are the things that we really want to go through, and what we want to do is make sure that we at least cover these items so that when we get into the ratification debates, that's going to take up a bulk of time. When we get into reading the Constitution, that's going to take a bulk of time. And so what we want to do is we want to make sure that we kind of stick to the curriculum, because this past year we kind of missed a few things. And I know this is an election year coming up, so we're going to have Feedback Friday, and Feedback Friday is where we're going to cover a lot of these other little topics. The past year, I basically gave you, in 2023, I gave you, if you elected me as president, this is what I would do. And so you can go through that, and I would recommend you do go through those broadcasts, those podcasts. I think it was a special edition Monday show that I did. But if you go through those Monday shows, you will find that this will give you a good guide in the upcoming election. And so with that, let me kind of dive into the curriculum, or I should say, let's dive into today's topic, because this is one out of two times during the year the world has to deal. When I say the world, I mean the non-Christian world has to deal with and acknowledge the life of Christ. And so many ways that they acknowledge this is because they know Christians are going to be doing a specific thing. And the one that they really exploit, because this is where they make their money, is what we call Christmas. Now, there's the other occasion that, they have to acknowledge, or regrettably, they have to at least say, yeah, he died. But obviously the atonement or Easter is, the other time that the heathens have to deal with us Christians. And so I think this is a really sad indictment. I know every Sunday we should be out there centering our lives on him. And the fact of the matter is, folks, when we look at the Pew reports or the Pew surveys and so forth, less than half of America is honoring the Sabbath. Less than half of America is active in Christianity. And so either we failed as parents, or as parents, we need to actually start reaching back to our kids and saying, what is it going to take to get you to get into, honoring and walking in the ways of the Lord and so forth. So anyway, that's for you to deal with. I'm just reporting the facts as I see it. Now, one of the things I've used, and I don't use the term that often, but I use it a lot in my book, Platonism. And so today's show is really about Platonism or statism or communism, because it was originally determined by Plato in his Republic, this idea of how the state should be able to give you, everything you need. And so if you want to read his Republic, it is on our Constitutional Articles page. And so as we move forward, keep in mind that the new Platonist efforts in this particular, time frame, era of time, began in 1776 in Germany. And so, again, we just want to give you the macro view of how they began manipulating it. Now, this Platonist effort was a direct contrast to what the framers were doing here in our republic at the time, because they were moving down a path of, and as a matter of fact, there's a book out there that we have on our website as well, The Proofs of a Conspiracy to Destroy the Religions and Governments, I believe it's the Religions and Governments of Europe. If you want that book, it's a PDF. You can just download it. Now, as a perceived quote-unquote good for all the Platonists to do what they were going to do, quote-unquote believed what was necessary for setting the stage for future manipulations. And so I believe that they actually started going down these paths because they did manipulate the Revolutionary War in France, the French Revolution. Now, it's really important to try to maintain an accurate historic perspective. So that's what we really want to do. And I want to kind of try to avoid my own filters, my own biases. So let me give you an attempt to kind of encapsulate, you know, what the history has laid out. So in the early 17th century, that means the 1600s, folks, a wave of religious reform changed the way what we'll call the winter wilding and how it was celebrated in Europe. In other words, the winter solstice, because it was all about the shortest day of the year. Everybody realized that, you know, when it got cold this time of year, the day was very, very short. And then they also realized, because look, Europe's a northern latitude nation. So it would see the extreme. So you didn't have to be a genius to realize that there were these solstices where you had the shortest day of the year and the longest day of the year. And so yesterday, or December 21st, is winter solstice, at least in this particular year. In the early 17th century, this change started actually changing how they were celebrating. However, in America, we were moving again towards this religious tolerance. In Europe, Oliver Cromwell and his Puritan forces took over England in 1645. They vowed to rid England of decadence and, as part of their effort, canceled the winter wilding holiday. And I think at this point in time, they were trying to adopt the idea of a Christmas or a Christian tone, even though it was lacking. I mean, it wasn't Christ-like. Charles II was restored to the throne, and with him came the return of the popular winter wilding holiday, because it was about getting drunk and celebrating. Keep in mind, this was a precursor to the Glorious Revolution, because that was when things started getting worse and worse, and government was being more oppressive, and so people were... In the winter months, you didn't have a lot of food, so you subsided on your liquor. The Pilgrims, who were English separatists, came to America in 1620. They were even more orthodox in their Puritan beliefs than Cromwell. Now, I've kind of speak to what the Pilgrims did with Thanksgiving in my Thanksgiving broadcast and how they failed to implement socialism. But the pagan version, or this winter wilding of what we call Christmas today, was not a holiday in America. It was more of, and it was truly, just a bunch of riotous behavior and getting drunk. From 1659 to 1681, the celebration of the pagan Christmas was outlawed in Boston. Anyone exhibiting this spirit, this drunkenness, was fined 5 shillings. In contrast, down in Jamestown, now in the South, this in the settlement of Virginia, Captain John Smith reported that the pagan Christmas was enjoyed by all and passed, quote unquote, without incident. And so, in other words, they were bracing themselves each year for this. After the American Revolution, the English customs really fell out of favor, including the pagan Christmas. In fact, Congress was in session on December 25th, 1789. the first, supposedly, Christmas under America's new Constitution. Actually, it wasn't even a Christmas. It was still being called the Winter Wilding. There were connotations that were they were trying to adopt that, but it wasn't what we would call Christmas today. It was a winter wilding. It was a festive drinking and drowning in supposedly your joy. There was no wilding or lewd and lascivious behavior allowed in America. Christmas wasn't even declared a federal holiday until much later in 1870, but we're going to build our way up to that. Up to this point, Christmas was recognized literally as a pagan holiday, not as a Christian event. It had no association to Christ whatsoever. In the 1800s, the 19th century, some Americans began to embrace pagan Christmas. And what they did was the elitist made this attempt to reinvent Christmas, and it changed from a loud, rowdy carnival holiday into a family-centered day of peace and nostalgia. And so there were a few things that kind of lent to this. So this is what we really want to dive into. So what happened in the early 1800s that should pique your interest into making of this Christmas holiday? At the end of the 18th century was the beginning of the class conflict and turmoil in Europe. In other words, the communist revolution was basically afoot. Or actually, no, the 18th century, the 1700s. And so you were seeing the churches being destroyed in Europe. That's where we were. And we just saw the French Revolution and the result of this. I mean, there was a lot of people that were just going, oh my gosh, this is terrible, because they were beheading everybody. And so these sentiments started leaching, or basically started trickling into America and into our culture. In the early 19th century, early 1800s, unemployment was high, and gang rioting by the disenchanted classes often occurred during what we called that winter wilding time, or what they were calling Christmas. Or somewhat of Americans at the time were still calling it winter wilding. But here's the key. It was getting worse and worse and worse. And in 1828, the city of New York, the city council instituted the city's first police force in response to the winter holidays, or the winter wilding called Christmas, and because of riot. And so this is when they actually decided to institute a mercenary force in America that was supposed to be using a militia. In other words, if we, the people, were to enforce the law and keep the order, it was in New York where the first, cookie was crumbling, where we were first starting to fall apart in adhering to the Constitution. Because bottom line, folks, what we needed in New York was we needed the militia, the people, to actually have to enforce and police themselves. And instead, they decided to hire a mercenary force. And as I have said, the day you create a mercenary force is just a matter of time till they finally start getting to the point where they say, well, you don't need to have guns in New York anymore. And they start taking away, because it is all about control, and it is about taking away your rights and actually your constitutional responsibility of enforcing the law and keeping the peace. That is the responsibility of every U.S. citizen, to support and defend that Constitution. And that's why we have militias. But New York was the first city to turn its back on the Constitution. So even before this, even before they created this police force, elitists were being harassed, and this galvanized the elitist intent to begin changing the way people perceived and celebrated this time of year. And more aptly stated, to change the behavior of the growing interest in the wilding time of year. Because more and more people were just, it was just getting worse and worse. In 1819, a gentleman by the name of Washington Irving wrote the sketchbook of Jeffrey Crayon, Gentleman. This series of stories about the celebration of Christmas in an English manor house began shifting the paradigm of Christmas. The stories were about an English squire who invited the peasants into his home for the holiday. In contrast to the problems faced in American society, the two groups mingled effortlessly in his stories. In Irving's mind, Christmas was a peaceful, warm-hearted holiday, bringing groups together across the lines of wealth or social status. Now, here's the fact. In Irving's fictional celebrations, it was fictional. These celebrations were of the disparate classes enjoying each other's company, you know, was supposedly being portrayed as ancient customs. The fact was, this was all made up in Irving's mind. He was portraying this paradigm of getting people to, oh, well, this is what we should be doing. To be clear, Irving's book series was not based on any holiday celebration that he had ever attended. And in fact, historians say that Irving's accounts actually invented the tradition by implying that it described the true customs of the season. See what just happened? So one man started creating this landscape of, you know, people being nice to each other. Now, folks, I'm telling you that there may have been a Christian tone to what Irving was putting into this book, but there was no point at all where this was about celebrating and being reverent in recognizing the birth of Christ. So, the early 19th century was also the beginning of the Second Awakening. Now, I've gone through this a bit. And I go through this in my book, that the early 1820s, 1830s was this point of time where the evangelical faith was beginning as the Republic was beginning to enjoy peace from the end of the American Revolution. What do I mean by that? Well, the Treaty of Ghent was finally signed in 1814. And so as we started, you know, unpacking, or as we started kind of settling into this new paradigm, because up until 1814, we had no certainty that we were not going to be harassed by Britain. And we still didn't know because they didn't honor the treaty in the first place. We didn't honor the treaty in the first place. Regardless of what that British Revolutionary Treaty stated, it was clear that Britain was still intent to try to pull us back. And they deliberately started impressing us. I mean, they were outright violating it. And to be honest, folks, we outright violated it too, because what we did with the Tories by confiscating their property was clearly an act that violated that, and we weren't going to honor it. That's one of the reasons why Britain continued. So even though you see people and the conspiracies out there tell you otherwise, there was no evidence whatsoever that America was going to bow back down to Britain, which is why they ended up invading. I mean, if you want any evidence that we weren't backing down, we weren't going to bow, we weren't coming back, the War of 1812 proved that. And so when we were done with that, and even most people think that we didn't really win that war, but we did. We finally sent that message with Andrew Jackson's big victory in the South while we were dealing with the treaty. We sent the message, you can't come here. You don't have what it takes to beat us. And that was a tough, bitter pill for Britain. And so from there, we will get back into this, you know, evangelical movement and how everything was kind of coming together as we started moving towards a planning of our societies, or as the states and cities, as we talked about New York, started planning this. So we'll be right back after this promo. Thank you so much.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. So as we were just, you know, kind of giving you some perspectives, what's really important, and as a matter of fact, I want to do an aside, because when we look at history, nine times out of ten, we get caught up in tunnel vision because we look right at that event, at that very specific event, like the New York ratification debates. We're looking at how they're debating this. But actually, the biggest thing that affected the New York ratification debates was the Virginia ratification. When they ratified, that sent the signal to New York, either you're in or you're going to be out because they're forming this government. And it really changed the tone of the New York ratification debates, which is why it was a slam dunk. That's why Alexander Hamilton was speaking in theory. So anyway, as we start looking at all of these things were going on, the whole world was influenced. Just like when we see, you know, our economy crash, it affects all of these other things. When we saw the prices as America, as George Bush manipulated grain and started dumping grain into the food supply so that it would falsely suppress the rising cost or the shortages that were really occurring in the agricultural industries for grain and grain products, that when that ran out in 2010, it caused the Arab Spring in 2011. So, I mean, these are chain reactions, or these are cause and effects that actually do happen. And so when we really look at what was going on and what were the influences in America, you know, when people start drilling in and they talk about one very specific event and they have no connection to, you know, what caused this or what was happening that, you know, had this major decision. One of the things I kind of point out to people is that America was so busy looking over its shoulder at the threat of Europe coming into America and basically challenging us, because Spain, France, and Britain was very antsy about getting into America. They were watching us closely. So we weren't in this protective bubble, which means that when we looked at some of these issues like slavery and many of the other problems that we were experiencing, they were influenced constantly by whether we had the ability. It was just absolutely amazing that in 1808, Madison kept true to shutting down the slave trade. I could just go on and on about how certain things actually happened with all of the other things that were going on. So, again, back into this, you know, this Christmas history, as we look at the early, you know, 1800s, there was this new Christian awakening. In other words, a lot of people were turning to Christ. In the 1820s, this evangelical explosion happened, which, as we look at it, this all came from America realizing that we were going to have peace, that we didn't have to worry about having to fight another war again, at least not for any time soon. So the abolition movement was also kicking off during this exact same time. John Quincy Adams, after he was defeated for his second term of presidency, became a senator and lived the rest of his life fighting for the abolition of slavery in the U.S. Senate. So, I mean, this was all happening at about that same time. And so the North and the South were not just divided on slavery, they were even divided on the issue of celebrating Christmas. Now, many Northerners saw sin in the celebration of the winter wilding. To these people, the different celebrations of Thanksgiving was more appropriate. And we already have talked about how America came together for that one Thanksgiving with George Washington's proclamation. And had we maintained that tune, I think America would have actually, we would be in a different place had we maintained that tone and maintained that reverence for the Constitution on Thanksgiving. Now, in the South, Christmas was an important part of the social season. Not surprisingly, the first three states to make Christmas a legal holiday, where in the South it was Alabama in 1836 and then Louisiana and Arkansas in 1838. Those are the first three states in America that legalized it as a holiday. They recognized it formally. And so, you know, that says a lot, right? Well, so what was happening? Irving created this, but all of a sudden, how did Christ start getting stitched into this? That's the one thing I really don't have here. Other than somehow people started actually stitching and basically laying this event of the birth of Christ to the 25th of December. Now, there's no evidence whatsoever. As a matter of fact, When I hear people challenge, you know, fall or springtime, it wasn't in December when Christ was born. And so how did that happen? That's one of the parts of the story I really can't tell you. But somehow Christ, you know, from Irving's stories up until the 1830s, somewhere Christ started getting stitched into this. And somebody started overlaying his birth. Oh, well, his birth was December 25th, just a few days after. You know, isn't it interesting that they took, you know, just a few days after the solstice when Christ was born? I guess they didn't really want to step on the speciality of that pagan solstice and that particular cell. I don't know. I mean, who and how, you know, because I look at Labor Day, and I know Labor Day was deliberately picked for September because the rest of the communism in the world was using May. And America actually considered having a Labor Day in May, but that would have made it would have created a direct tie for people to actually see, hey, this is related to communism. Collectivized labor, that's communism. And so that's why we have it in September. Anyways, slowly this new concept of Christmas began to grow. And in the years after the Civil War, Christmas traditions started spreading across the country. Children's books played an important role in spreading supposedly customs. These are all concocted, folks. Remember, there were no customs. Irving created it in his head. So they started portraying these customs. They were generating, they were giving birth to customs that we would see today. So in other words, when you talk to your parents and your grandparents, what were the customs of their time? Well, that was the outcome of their grandparents and so forth. I mean, this has gone so generational that nobody questions anything about Christmas. Why are these very specific symbols and artifacts? Why the tree? Why all of these things got stitched into this? If we stitch in a gold coin, then that means everybody has to have a gold coin. Well, if I'm a gold merchant, then that would be a great thing. But if I can make something cheap and sell it for a high, like a tree, a Christmas tree, go cut a tree down out of the forest and then sell you that. And then, wow, now we got some competition. And this is how things grow and how these markets were created. So anyway, as we started looking at these supposedly customs in these children books, you know, they started creating these trimmed trees and gifts. And all of a sudden, this character, Santa, got stitched into this as well. Now, I don't know how many people play with anagrams, but Santa is an anagram. Or basically, you can take Santa and it's same letters, you can create the word Satan. Is that a coincidence? It's interesting. But bottom line, Sunday school classes encourage the celebration of this new Christian version of paganism because they've now overlaid Christ and his birth into this. Women's magazines, this is still in the 1800s, right? Women's magazines were important in suggesting ways to decorate. I mean, this is how people received their news, right? You either had the newspaper or you could get these beautiful pictorials, magazines, or what have you that cost a lot of money, cost more money. And like one of the very first things, it's Sears Roebuck catalog. That was an 1800 publication and it was free. Because it was nothing but an advertisement of buying things from them. And you'd be surprised what you could buy from them. But anyway, these women's magazines provided ways to decorate the holidays, as well as how to make these decorations or where to buy the material to make them. You see? Where can you buy this? How can you do this? And in some cases, some of this you can do by yourself, like, you know, stitching popcorn onto a thread and using that to wrap around the tree. Children's books played a very, very important role in this whole thing. And it was basically the first indoctrination for children in developing customs that we're dealing with today. So, folks, if you want to go down this exact same path, start with children's books. So when we start looking at all the great things, and I already told you about the store catalogs, all the great things you could buy, all of these things being promoted, this was all creating what we would call a custom, but it wasn't. It was actually creating the custom. And at this time, literature and the progressive press had begun to congeal in manipulating the social affairs. They wanted people to become tolerant. They wanted people, They wanted people to become tolerant. They wanted people to become open to, you know, these concepts that challenged your Christian faith. Challenge whether this was right or wrong. Where, you know, is it fair because somebody doesn't believe in Christ that, you know, they don't get their day in court? Because just remember, at that point in time, even Joseph Story, who was the Supreme Court justice in his memoirs, talked about why atheists, non-Christians, could not get a day in court in an American court. Did you know that, folks? No. Why? Because our history has been completely perverted. Oh, well, that's not very tolerant. If you actually learned that only Christians in good standing could actually go and make an appeal into court. There were cases, and even Alexis de Tocqueville in Democracy in America actually reported a case where a judge in the 1830s kicked out an atheist claim because he was atheist. Because the court had no credit. They had no faith in what this man was going to testify to. Even Thomas Jefferson was affected by this. So this is why we have to look at the macro view. So it was important that we, you know, to get us out of the churches, we had to start adopting these things. And so that's what happened. We started getting these magazines and all of these ideas that, oh, well, this is what we have to do. And this is how, you know, this is the customs and this is what we should be doing. I mean, that's how it was really portrayed. So moving through the 1800s, it wasn't until 1870 when President Ulysses S. Grant declared Christmas a legal holiday. The bill to make Christmas a holiday was introduced into the House of Representatives by Representative Burton Chauncey Cook of Illinois, and it was approved and passed to the Senate on June 24, 1870. When both houses had to agree on the wording, it was passed on to President Grant, who signed it on June 28, 1870. And oh, by the way, they don't have any constitutional authority to be even wasting time on picking holidays. But that's what they did. It's not within the Constitution. That's not a role or responsibility or power. It's not enumerated in the Constitution. And yet, they felt obligated to do it. Because at this point in time, anything they felt like doing, the federal government started doing it. The only reason they didn't become dark and evil was because society was slowly losing its moral backbone. And as we were evolving into moral turpitude, as we have it today, where the majority of society has turned its back on our Christian morals and so forth, well, it took, let's see, that's how long it takes to move a culture and move a society. You know, it was profoundly told to me as I started on this endeavor that, I was expecting that I could change the culture of, you know, conservatives and everything else in a reasonable amount of time. And this gentleman pointed out, he said, you know, it took Moses 40 years to change the culture of Israel. Now, that was a spiritual culture. I look at Martin Luther. Martin Luther changed the culture of Germany in 10 years. I know it can't be done in a day, folks, but I do believe it can be done in a matter of a few years. We have to be determined to help everybody obtain the facts. That's why the whole campaign of petitioning and everything is being provided to you. Anyway, here is the wording of that act. And this is what it says. An act making the first day of January, the 25th day of December, the fourth day of July, and Thanksgiving Day holidays within the District of Columbia, be it enacted. And so they had the exclusive legislative authority to do this. But so this was outside of the Constitution. But again, they did have exclusive legislation to do this. This is the language now. The first day of January, commonly called New Year's Day, the fourth day of July, the 25th of December, commonly called Christmas Day, and any day appointed or recommended by the President of the United States as a day of public fast or Thanksgiving shall be holidays within the District of Columbia, and shall, for all purposes for presenting for payment or acceptance of the maturity and protest and giving notice of the dishonor of bills of exchange, bank checks and promissory notes or other negotiable or commercial paper be treated and considered as the first day of the week, commonly called Sunday, and all notes, drafts, checks, or other commercial or negotiable paper falling due or maturing on either the said holidays shall be deemed as having matured on the day previous. By the last quarter of the 19th century, America eagerly decorated trees, caroled, baked, and shopped for the Christmas season. Since that time, materialism, media, advertising, and mass marketing has made Christmas a worldwide impact. The concept of providing physical gifts to others, like the three wise men who were recognizing the newborn king, is a perversion. Because when you really think about it, these men were honoring him as the king. They went, sought him out. This is not like what we see in Christmas gifts. And so when we try to adopt these types of things, then we have to really start thinking, you know, why are we spending so much money on gifts? Well, because the corporate America wants you to. and you and we will all behave accordingly, because people's feelings get hurt because you didn't give them a lot of gifts on Christmas. We need to stop. We need to shift our focus. We need to change. The traditions that we enjoy at Christmas today were invented. Some things came to be by the blending together customs from many different countries into what is considered to be our national holiday. Ergo, the roots in the pagan acts give credence to help obfuscate the truth that Christmas was not a holiday in Christ's time or by Christ himself, which was Passover. That said, many Christians today may not know the details of Christmas, but almost all know that it is a pagan holiday. It's got pagan roots that was infused with celebrating the birth of Christ. Now, as far as I'm concerned, we look at Thanksgiving, and I tell you, Thanksgiving is our most, as a nation, it is our more spiritual holiday that we can celebrate as a nation. Because we as a nation are recognizing, if we're following the tone that George Washington and the very first Congress actually established, then we are giving service to him in giving thanks for this Constitution and for our liberties that we have been blessed with. As Christians, we choose what to do. As Christians, we choose, you know, how we're going to behave. And as parents, we teach our children either these cockamamie, you know, concocted ideas that Santa exists, or we start having honest conversations that we really talk about the real birth of Christ and how we should be celebrating it. I hate to make anybody feel bad about centering their life on Christ. You shouldn't. We shouldn't. But what we're doing with Christmas is not centering our lives on Christ unless we're actually centering our lives on Christ and not caring about all of the trees and all of the artifacts that they have presented to us as a part of this, I'll just say, this point in time of celebrating the birth of Christ. They're just artifacts that have been pushed into this. The real fact is, folks, that if we really take a step back and we start looking at how we can center our lives on Christ, not just, you know, the 25th of December, but we really need to start trying to center. And this is why I would love to see one day a month, you know, when we look at, you know, his discourses, you know, why aren't we celebrating the Sermon on the Mount? Why aren't we celebrating all of these very, you know, the raising of Lazarus? We should be looking to try to commemorate every day of his life and what he did in casting out spirits, the miracles that he performed. Folks, we always benefit when we center our lives on Christ. It brings blessings into our lives. Why wouldn't we want to actually really do that? I can tell you that when you really look at the emotions that are tied into this material thing called Christmas, it can actually cause, I mean, why is it that people have a bad Christmas time? Because somebody was disappointed with their, I mean, look at all the fight and discontent that runs amok among us because of our concocted Christmas. Let's step back. Let's start stepping back and focusing really on Christ. There are churches that are trying to get people to do this. You know, I'm actually trying to get you to go cold turkey, quit doing it. Center on Christ, not on the materialistic things. Because in so doing, we will actually receive him on that day and at that time when we open our hearts and focus on him. Let's actually do that and not focus on the corporate bottom line. Now, I need to kind of cut it off here, but I just want to actually say that we should always look for ways for us to celebrate Christ in our lives for what he did. And like I said, we could go a long way in making every day of the year something that he has done, because he lived every day of the year when he was doing his ministry. Anyway, let me get into the curriculum of what we're going to be covering next year. I'm going to start off with the scale of liberty and this concept of, and the paradigm of liberty and, you know, this idea of control and liberty back and forth. We're going to get into natural law. We're going to get into the American, basically the concept of American republicanism diving towards the American Revolution. In other words, as we started deciding to go against Britain, we actually started creating this new concept that evolved from the very beginning before the Revolution into the Constitution, where we galvanized American republicanism. We've got the Tory Acts, the Ratification Debates, the Assumption Acts, the Cod Fishery Bounties, Madison's Essay on Property, the Whiskey Rebellion. Then we're going to dive into the history of the 11th Amendment. And we're going to talk a little bit about the 1798 resolutions, which is, we just did this recently. We're going to do the 12th Amendment, or actually the history of the 12th Amendment and the 13th Amendment. Then we're going to go into the State Enabling Acts. We're going to dive into the Missouri Compromise, the Monroe Doctrine, Manifest Destiny. And if I can stick to this, and if we can actually knock this stuff out, you will have 1 year of discourses that you can actually look at and go through and maybe not have a profound understanding, but you'll be able to actually understand and go find what you need, because I would love to have people become subject matter experts on these types of topics. This Monroe Doctrine, Nullification Doctrine, the vetoes of the Department of Transportation, Madison's letter to John G. Jackson, the creation of the Department of Home. We want to dive into the history of the 14th, the history of the 15th, 16th, 17th, 18th. We even want to dive into the history of the 19th, the 24th, and the 26th Amendment, because we need to understand why these things are so significant, especially in an election year. Throughout the year, we're going to be talking about the First Amendment petitions, the movement of what you need to do and how you can do this. We want to pepper this throughout the Feedback Fridays, but the center is First Amendment petitions in driving and holding our public servants accountable to the Constitution and driving towards full constitutional compliance. That's what we need out of our government. I want to dive into common law and common law grand juries, and I'd like to have Paul Nally. Hopefully I can get Paul Nally back and we can dive into this again. We want to talk about the parties. We need to talk about the Uniparty and how they've been absolutely destructive and how they've pushed us into this abyss that we're in today. We want to also go into the significance of Labor Day, Thanksgiving, and Christmas. And oh, by the way, at the very end of the year, we're going to give you how to set effective goals. So next week, Friday, maybe Thursday and Friday, we will go through how to set effective goals so that you can become more successful in the year 2024. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.